Good evening and welcome to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget, you can always listen to us when you're on the move by downloading the Guardian Radio app to your mobile device, or if you just don't want to deal with a mobile device, which I know people that don't want to, you can go just to your regular computer and you can go to www.guardiantalkradio.com and you can click on the live stream button. So tonight in the studio, I have a guest from New York who was here last week and gave a lecture at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. And I hope some of you were able to see that. I'm going to introduce him to you now. His name is Seth Rodney. Good evening, Seth.
Good evening.
And Seth Rodney is a PhD. He has his PhD that he got in England, right?
That's correct.
In the UK? Mm-hmm. In London. Was born in Jamaica, but came of age in the Bronx in New York, where he lives and works. He's a staff writer and editor for an online art magazine called Hyperallergic. So if anyone is interested in sort of what's happening globally in the world, Hyperallergic is a really interesting website where you can read reviews and essays about artists and things from all over the world. So he's a staff writer and an editor there. And he also just writes on contemporary art and other related issues. He's written for CNN, the op-ed pages, for the American Craft Museum, NBC Universal, and he's written catalog essays as well for various artists. He also has his own podcast called The American Age. How do you listen to that, Seth?
You can go to theamericanage.org or you can find us on Apple iTunes.
Oh, cool. Okay. And it's actually that we were talking before we got started. You don't only talk about art and culture on that. You talk about all kinds of stuff?
That's correct. Actually, we had a format in the previous year. I think we're on our second year now. In the previous year, we talked about a variety of topics and issues. And I think midway through 2018, we were joined by a third person, Steve N. G. Forward, who used to be an archivist at the Schomburg Research mm-hmm, Center. Mm-hmm. And I should mention, just to clarify, it's not really my podcast. Mm-hmm. It's really a podcast started by Travis Webb as part of this larger sort of philanthropic project. Now what we do on The American Age is we tackle a subject and we take it through several sessions, several broadcasts. What we started off the year talking about was pornography.
Oh, like, interesting.
Yeah, like mm-hmm. what, how it functions, what is it there for, why it's so compelling to mm-hmm. to people. I mean, the sort of anecdotal version of the story is, you know, if there were no pornography, like, the internet wouldn't exist. Like, the internet is, like, you know, 75% porn. So we talk about why that is and mm-hmm. how that affects our lives or our thinking about ourselves, our sexuality, about race. And that, I think we went through that topic. It took us about 6 weeks, and now we're into white supremacy. Now we're talking about so all of the ways and means of white supremacy, mm-hmm. how it shows up, how it affects our lives, how it is both an ideology and a systemic mm-hmm. structural apparatus. Mm-hmm. And we'll see where the next few weeks take mm-hmm. takes
how
us.
How interesting. So, yeah, listen to that then. That sounds really fascinating. We were talking about that again. Seth's been here for a couple of days, so we've had lots of time in the car, and we've been covering a whole bunch of topics. And we were speaking about that also before we came on the air, about grappling with a system we've inherited and how we can kind of navigate our way through that through finding new language or through kind of having deep conversations to try to really understand what it is we're dealing with rather than just kind of go to these very polar extremes and quickly get angry at each other and call each other names, but to really try to kind of unpack what that means. Because again, like, white supremacy is a word, you know, we talked about that off the air too. There's certain terms that as soon as you utter them,
Some people
will shut down.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You know, and so, like, can we? So, you know, how do we have a conversation about something that as soon as you say the word, it's already too late in a way.
Yeah,
so, you know,
yeah,
again, that's really fascinating. So Seth was here for the listeners. Seth is an art critic, and he was here to give a lecture at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. We had a lot of students and art makers there to talk about the importance of criticism and about writing about art writing. Since we just jumped from white supremacy to that, my first question is, as a person of color, as a male person of color in a really white art world, or art scene, we decided we should call it, because it's not a, we said, yeah, not a world. How did you find your way to doing what you do and becoming someone who's in quite a powerful position, in fact?
Well, great question. I went about it in a very sort of, I'm going to drop a $10 word here, circumlocutious way, mm-hmm. circumlocutious manner. I started off, and I want to go back to undergrad because I think that's really where the seeds were planted. Basically, the first time I ever walked into a museum was when I was about 17. I grew up in a Jamaican household in the North Bronx. I went to private Christian school and church like almost 3 times a week, typically. I never saw the inside of a museum before I went away to college. Mm-hmm. And then on a class trip, we went to MoMA. And mm-hmm. we walked into MoMA. And I remember the objects I saw were some of the ones that I first saw imprinted themselves on me in a way that it's just, they're indelible. I remember seeing...
Sorry, go on.
Umberto Boccioni's Unique Forms of Continuity in Space.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
The gold statue that looks like it's moving.
The gold statue that looks like it's kind of morphing. Yes. Yeah, yeah. You can't even get to the Matrix without seeing that statue. Yeah.
it's astonishing.
It is astonishing.
And then Louis Bourgeois, mm-hmm. a piece called Sleeper 2, I think, which looks like a kind of catamaran boat, except that the sort of middle piece, which would be the sort of hull of the boat, we're talking about a very small boat. It's actually kind of hollowed out shape of a human form, but the head kind of looked like the head of a penis. So mm-hmm. she's doing several things at mm-hmm. the same time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it all kind of looked like vaguely African sculpture. Mm-hmm. I was just fascinated. I was fascinated with visual art from the moment I set foot in a visual art museum. And then I was also fascinated by the written word. I was fascinated mm-hmm. by poetry around the same time. And eventually what I did was I got a degree in English, but I wanted to be an artist, developed a photography portfolio, used that to get into grad school, art school, and got an MFA at UC Irvine mm-hmm. out in Southern California. And then for a few years, I fell away from art, and I just realized that I wasn't much of a studio artist at all. Mm-hmm. And I was actually, interestingly enough, what I found in the MFA program was that the strongest work that I made was actually based on text. Mm-hmm. So I was really good at using words yeah. and using language.
So it's like, how do you marry those two things together, basically?
Precisely. Yeah. That yeah. was the question that faced me at the end of the MFA, and after doing a few years of working in retail and just being very unhappy, I figured out a way to do it was to further mm-hmm. my education mm-hmm. and go on to London. I wanted to live outside of the U.S. And as an aside, quickly, one of the things that is a kind of persistent mythology mm-hmm. in the U.S. is that, and my father used to say this to me all the time when I was a kid, mm-hmm. the United States is the best country on the planet. It's the mm-hmm. best country in the world. Mm-hmm. And I always wanted to say to him, it drives me nuts. How do you know? Mm-hmm. Where else have you lived besides Jamaica and the U.S.?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just nonsense and myth-making. So I lived in London. Mm-hmm. I lived in London for 5.5 years. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that there are ways in which London has a literate society.
Yes, very much so.
That puts the U.S. popular culture, at least at the level of popular culture, to shame.
Yeah, very much. I went to college in Paris, actually, but I'd been educated in the UK, and mm-hmm. A lot of my peers were American, and it was interesting how I had been taught in such a different way that I was able to like write already like long essays and put my thoughts together in a way that, and it wasn't that my American peers at the age of 17 were less smart at all.
Exactly.
It's just they hadn't actually been taught that skill, and it was quite interesting to
precisely. I do think that generally speaking, American education really is concerned with content.
Yeah,
I think that
knowing facts,
the questions that they ask mm-hmm. yep. really pertain to what you're studying. Mm-hmm. Because I think in the UK there's a bit more emphasis on how you're studying it. Mm-hmm. What is your methodology? What is your mm-hmm. research plan?
And how do things interconnect?
Yes.
Like, how does one subject actually connect to another subject rather than keeping them in boxes that are separate?
Right. And I think kind of exploring the boundaries of disciplinary thought, I think, is key to the kind of education I got in the UK. I went to, by the way, University of London, Birkbeck College, right in Bloomsbury. In fact, the front of our university college was the back, like right across the square from the back of the British Museum.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. So you get, there's access. So yeah. I was going to ask, when you were talking about that you first went to a museum when you were 17,
right.
Was there, to grow up in your household that you've described as, you know, Jamaican, moved to the States, living in the Bronx, was it something that had never been broached in your household? Was it something that was discouraged because it wasn't for quote-unquote people like us or like you or whatever? Was it just a general feeling? Was it you didn't even know there was an existence? Like how...
It was a blind spot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't remember my parents having a conversation with me ever about art, ever.
And in school, not either?
I'm trying to think. Literature, yes. But I went to one of those weird Christian schools where they looked at everything, even biology, through the lens of the Bible. I mean, this is. I mean, it's inches away from being a cult, is what it was. I don't remember. I don't recall that. I remember reading, like, maybe Stephen Crane or something, or some kind of literature that was maybe, I don't remember. I don't remember, but maybe John Steinbeck or something.
No, I mean, I'm just curious about, because again, you know, the absence of people of color from the art world, you know, it's like, how do you attack that, right? And is it because it's something that's just considered something, like, again, not quote-unquote for us, or, you know?
Right. So that's great, because I want to talk, that leads me to remember that there's a moment when I was going off to do my MFA in California. I was trying to get support from my father to help me essentially buy a truck so I could just move all my stuff, drive across country with my friend Lawrence to get to Southern California. And my father said something dismissive, like, how are you going to make a living doing that? And I remember thinking, I don't have an answer because I don't know. I just thought I'd figure it out. I mean, there's something about my generation. And I'm 48 now. And I remember having this conversation with Carrie Patterson, who also graduated the same class, 2001, from UC Irvine. And we said to each other, this was a few years ago when I was deeply struggling to get to where I am now. And she said, yeah, I remember when we graduated, we just thought we'd figure it out. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, like, you know, it was going to be difficult, whatever, but we just find a way.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out to be a lot more difficult than that. And a lot of people have not found their way. Mm-hmm. But, so to answer the question that initially led to this portion of the conversation, I got my PhD after several years of an uphill climb. Several years, I like to say, in the wilderness. It took me about 10 years all told.
Mm-hmm.
Got the PhD. And then I started writing, contributing to Hyperlogic.
Mm-hmm.
Then, because I loved to write about art so much and was good at it, I eventually got on staff, eventually became an editor, because I actually am, I think, relatively insightful about how language works. So I can actually help to shepherd pieces written by other people through that editorial process.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm here, and I am one of the very few black men in the art scene who has this position where I am not only writing regularly about art, but I am also guiding other writers to greater clarity in their work about art. And so my route to this place was difficult, and it was rough, but
worthwhile.
It absolutely is possible.
Yeah,
it can be done, and I think part of what makes it possible is imagining that it can be done, that you can be the person you want to be, and you can marry your passions to your skills to your work life. And I'm proof that it is true and it is possible.
That's extremely powerful and a good place to go to our first break. So Seth Rodney is speaking about his journey to become an art critic or an art writer, staff writer, and also the editor at Hyperlogic, which is, again, a very widely read art journal online. We're going to go to a quick break, and we're going to come back to speak more about why writing about art is important, which might sound like a simple question, but it really isn't. So you are listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the executive director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this break.